L'Officine Universelle Bully presents Ancient Beauty Rituals, Episode 3. Justine Goes to the Ball. A young peasant girl from central France prepares to go to the village ball in Aurillac, France, 1863. Justine left the stable and hastily headed back to the family farmhouse. It had been such a long day, as were all days on the farm, waking at dawn and tending tirelessly to the cows, and milking, and laundry. What pulled her through this day was her utter excitement for tonight's village ball. Every year, on May 25th, a celebration was held in the village of Aurillac for the beginning of transhumans, when cows were sent off to pasture. Like her parents and grandparents before her, she was full of hope for the season ahead. Hope for their cows to make the best milk from the flowery meadow grass, and therefore the tastiest Salers cheese. All hopes were brought together and celebrated on that yearly festivity. The prospect of meeting people from another village was thrilling. So thrilling that upon the first bell toll marking 4 o'clock, she shed her apron and rushed the last cow back into its stable, heading back to the farmhouse to bathe exceptionally and get ready for the festivities. Justine's head was bubbling with all the beauty tips she'd been collecting those last weeks from Henriette, her friend who worked at a pharmacy in Aurillac. Even in rural areas, pharmacies and markets with pre-made beauty products or ingredients to make them existed. Travelling salespeople also visited less populous areas and towns, with France's growing railway system making travel easier. By the mid-19th century, women's magazines were circulated in cities, and a few made their way to provincial areas. There was a beauty guide written by performer Lola Monté in 1858, which was quite popular. If people in rural areas did not actually have access to a copy, the beauty secrets in the book spread by word of mouth. At-home bathing was not a regular occurrence for most Europeans until the mid-19th century. Even then, baths were usually only taken once a week or every other week. And given the labour required to heat the water and fill up the tub, families often took turns using the same bath, starting with the head of the family, usually the father, and ending with the youngest child. Bar soap was also not widely used. While several major soap production centres existed in France, Italy and Spain since the Middle Ages, it was not until the mid-19th century, when industrialisation took hold, that bar soap became commonplace. Bar soap in France most likely came from Marseille and was made with olive oil or other vegetable-based oil, alkaline ash from sea plants and seawater, much less harsh than the usual lye soap. Moisturisers for the body were not used regularly, but could be made from a mixture of glycerin and rose water. Oat bran was used to exfoliate the body, which took place during bathing. Particular attention was paid to the hands. Like the face, beauty standards dictated that the hands should not show age or pigmentation. One softening treatment recommended boiling sheep's fat, vegetable oil, a bit of soap, then adding a grain of musk to the warm mixture. Hands were covered in the concoction and topped off with a pair of gloves to be worn overnight. Nails were kept short and gently scrubbed with a brush once a week. Justine's thoughts lingered upon the upcoming party in her cool bath. She certainly didn't have time to heat many buckets of water that day. Nevertheless, she was treating herself to a bath for this special occasion. That was just fine, as the spring day felt unusually hot. She sipped on the mead she had poured herself before she started filling the tub. Her father would surely have disapproved of her drinking on her own at that time of the day, which made her smile and think of last year's ball. Her cousin Lucien had kept her cup full all evening without her noticing, and she had ended up falling asleep at the table, missing most of the fun and dancing. This year she wouldn't let that happen again. She felt relaxed and clean, completely refreshed. Justine was a country girl, all right, but she certainly appreciated taking good care of herself and looking at herself in the mirror. As a 16-year-old girl, she was intrigued by the nascent attraction she was discovering in boys' eyes. On the way to the market with her mother, she'd always noticed a few insistent glances, even from some of the boys she'd played with as a child by the river. This year, musicians were coming from out of town. A distant cousin of Aurillac's Mayer was a violinist and would be bringing his fellow horn player, drummer and guitarist for the event, as well as their many friends from Vézac. Maybe she would meet a young man and dance with him all evening. Like her mother met her father at the very same ball 20 years before, the ball was always an opportunity to discover new songs and dance merrily in the candlelit village hall. Colourful lanterns were strung to the ceiling and bobbed around with the wind. Local farmers and villagers prepared generous spreads of food, a way to summon an abundant season. This year's ball was bound to be special because Germain, a famous Parisian painter and portraitist residing in the area, was meant to come and offer pastel portraits to attendees. Henriette had treated Justine to a few recipes and recommendations so she could look her absolute best for her portrait. Justine got the appropriate ingredients at the market the week prior and was now ready to prepare them. Recipes for face washes, moisturizers, and other treatments made from natural ingredients were passed down for many generations and still widely used in France during the 19th century. A simple facial cleanser could be made from brandy and rose water, while a more complex one that doubled as a moisturizing or glowing mask called for a combination of flour made from ground cucumber and melon seeds, fresh cream, lemon oil, and musk. Other common facial skincare ingredients included honey, wheat bran and almond oil. Any sort of animal fat, or even strips of raw beef applied directly to the face, were considered an excellent overnight moisturising and plumping treatment. As very pale, fair skin without freckles or other pigmentation was favoured, some popular whitening or freckle-removing treatments consisted of steeping the pimpernel plant in rainwater or applying a combination of lemon juice, rose water, and either alum or fresh milk. Lip salve was commonly made from spermaceti, or whale oil, rose oil, and white wax, or tinted lip balm made from beeswax and cochineal, or crushed flower petals. People would get these ingredients at the market or pharmacy, along with recommendations on the recipes. They also learned the recipes from their mother, or from women's magazines and books. Shampoo, as we know it today, did not exist in 19th century France, but women kept their hair clean and shiny by rinsing it with water and brushing daily. Washing was done once a week, sometimes less, with plain soap or homemade recipes. These recipes usually called for eggs, either whole or just the whites or yolks, and a rinse of alcohol, rum or brandy, and plain water or rose water. Sometimes a vinegar rinse was used, or tea rinses to help temporarily colour and conceal grey hair. While some recipes called for alcohol to rinse, it's not clear how many actually in rural France used it, and how frequently. We know that several European empresses used cognac and brandy, so maybe a farm girl would just use Castile soap, eggs and rainwater. One recipe called for infusing water with rosemary sprigs and preserving with a few drops of alcohol and using that mixture in between washes. Since Justine's parents and her two younger sisters were already at the village hall preparing food for the event, the empty house was unusually silent and Justine felt so luxuriously alone and grown up. She'd be spending the whole evening with her good old friends Suzanne and Henriette, whom are both 18. Suzanne was very daring and talked to strangers, played cards, and sometimes even smoked when nobody was looking. She would definitely help Justine break the ice and talk with any young man that piques her curiosity. Justine's excitement grew as she thought of all the music and dancing that would take place that night. That was her absolute favourite thing to do, and she had rehearsed the steps of the cotillon dance with Suzanne and her two sisters over the past weeks. As her hair was drying, wearing only her chemise undergarment, she pulled her most beautiful dress from the wooden chest in the main room. She'd been repairing and enhancing that old dress of her mother's for the past weeks, every evening by the fire. She had added embroidered ribbon around the neckline and waist, as well as new buttons she'd covered with blue velvet. She brushed it with care, smoothed out a hem, and laid it on the bed, ready to be slipped on. From a small box hidden under some fabrics, Justine removed a floral flap headdress, on which she had sewn a blue ribbon tie and pinned on a small pewter pin to hold a flower. The church bell tolled 5 o'clock. Justine sat in front of her small mirror at the dining table to do her hair. European women in the mid-19th century generally kept their hair long, with the occasional tiny trim. Cutting significant length was rare and usually only done when one was ill. For daily wear, hair was usually parted in the middle and worn away from the face in a variety of ways. Most popularly, 1 or 2 braids on each side and gathered into a low bun and often protected with a snood or hairnet. Special occasions, however, called for more elaborate styles. Rolls were particularly popular in the 1860s. Hair was rolled on each side and at the nape of the neck with rats, which were homemade hair pieces made from hair collected from brushes, providing additional volume and shape. Sometimes the roll was fashioned into a bow shape. Stray hairs were smoothed down with wax pomade, and the overall style was kept in place with the use of a substance known as bandolin. Bandolin was a sticky liquid made from quince seeds and water, and preserved with spices like cloves or essences of rose, rosemary, lemon, or neroli. For braided or rolled styles, a sponge was the preferred method of application, while fingers were used on curls and ringlets. Additionally, for special events, hair could be adorned with ornaments like jewellery, ribbons, and flowers, either a whole wreath or individual flowers pinned to the rolls or curls. Wealthier women sometimes sprinkled dust made from crushed silver or gold leaf for extra sparkle, the popularity of which was attributed to Empress Eugenie and the silver powder she wore in her hair at the 1860 Festival of Boeuf Gras. 19th century women used combs for detangling and a brush to keep the hair healthy by gently distributing the natural oils from the scalp to the rest of the hair. Brushing was recommended twice daily. In the 1860s, hairbrushes were only just beginning to be made by machine. Machine-made brushes weren't common until the 1880s. Up to that point, brushes were handmade by a craftsman. Because of this, they were usually given as gifts for special occasions, such as weddings or christenings, but perhaps could have been passed down through the family. Brushes for the middle class were usually made with wood and horsehair or boar bristles, while a wealthier woman may have a brush made from bone and boar bristles. The most expensive brushes were made from ivory or bone with decorative carvings or with sterling silver backing and handles. Functional combs, i.e. those just used for detangling, were made with horn or metal, while decorative combs and hairpins were made from ivory, tortoiseshell, and silver. Once ready, Justine tied a scarf over her hair to protect it while she slipped on her dress. She had been thrilled by her time alone at home, but now something she had not thought of arose. Who would fasten her dress? It needed to be buttoned all the way up to the top, and usually her sisters or mother would fulfill that task. She twisted and stretched and wrapped her arms around the back of her neck, to no avail. Getting flushed and slightly panicked, Justine tried time and time again. She twisted the dress around for the buttons to be closed in front, and twisted the tightened dress back, leaving the three top buttons open. She must absolutely remember to ask Suzanne to fasten them. The church bell rang 5:30. She was feeling rushed suddenly. She heard a horse and cart go by on the main road, carrying a group of loud and jolly folks. Near, a group of horses and horn sounds, maybe the musicians from Verzac. She must find her second shoe at once. Beauty standards in 19th century France generally called for a natural look. A pale, even complexion was favoured, and slightly rosy lips and cheeks were associated with good health. Paint, i.e. white face makeup primarily made from lead and bismuth, was not used by most women as it was considered gauche and artificial. Heavy makeup of any kind was reserved for the stage. But a subtle hint of colour on lips and cheeks, along with an undetectable dusting of face powder, was acceptable, and in some cases even encouraged to achieve the beauty ideals of the time. For special occasions, most women wore a bit of lip tint, rouge or blush, and powder. Powder rouge was made from red sandalwood, saffron, red ochre or cochineal, otherwise known as carmine, mixed with rice or talcum powder and applied with lamb's wool. Fun fact, in 1863, Bourgeois introduced the first compact rouge by baking powder and water into a round mould. Rouge also existed in other forms, pomade, which is colourant mixed with wax and applied with fingers, rouge en crépon, pieces of twisted silk or cotton soaked in colourant that were applied by dampening with alcohol and rubbed onto the face, and rouge en feuille, carmine on small pieces of thick paper applied by dipping a cloth or sponge onto the paper and then rubbed onto the face. Face powder was produced from potato starch, rice powder, or poudre de riz, or occasionally talc, and scented with orris root. By the mid-19th century, these items were typically pre-made and available as an inexpensive purchase in pharmacies or chemist shops, even in small rural towns. But some women still preferred to make their own recipes that had been handed down from past generations. Eyebrows and lashes were sometimes darkened with burnt cork, cloves, or elderberry juice to add some definition and make them more prominent. However, it was of utmost importance that both appeared natural, especially the brows. Heavily drawn brows that did not follow one's natural brow line were, once again, the domain of the theatre. Eyebrow colouring was drawn on with a camel's hair brush, while burnt hairpins were often used to add colour to the lashes. Like cosmetics, any perfume was expected to be subtle, even in France, during the mid-19th century. Women typically wore a few drops of scent not directly on their skin, but sprinkled into their gloves or a handkerchief. The most popular fragrance was eau de cologne, a base of neroli oil diluted with distilled water. Other common scents were simple botanical essences, such as lavender, cloves, frankincense, orange blossom, and rose, especially otto of rose, made from the rose of centifolia flower. Justine almost forgot the only reason she was allowed to stay behind at the farm while her family went ahead to the village hall. She was asked to remove the puntinari, or leftover pâté dish, from the stove, wrap it up, and fill two bottles of mead that she'd take over to the event. Suzanne would be picking her up any time now to walk over to the village hall together, and she had no patience at all, that dear Suzanne. If Justine was late to meet her outside the gate, who knows how Suzanne would react. Dresses with voluminous hoop skirts were the main style for upper-class women in 1860s France. If a lady was venturing outdoors, the bodice portion of her dress was covered with a shawl or wrap, the size and material of which depended on the weather. Typically short lace shawls for warmer months and larger cashmere or wool wraps for cooler temperatures. Bonnets were also worn outdoors. In the early 1860s, they tended to be worn slightly further back on the head, and overall they were smaller than in previous decades, so as to reveal more of the face. Women typically carried pochettes, small drawstring purses made of velvet or silk. Justine could finally leave the house. She stepped out very carefully onto the path in front of the farm, lifting the bottom of her skirt, avoiding puddles of water and mud, hopping from stone to stone while clutching onto her basket. She saw Suzanne arriving from the western path. Thank goodness she was not late after all. Maybe it was a good sign for the evening to come. The two girls greeted each other with laughter and cheers and started their walk towards the village, arm in arm, singing. They stopped by the river to pick some mountain arnica flowers that they placed in each other's hair. As they approached the village, they started hearing cheers. The band has just begun to play. The smell of roast poultry and honey cakes filled the air. Justine felt beautiful as ever and was filled with excitement for what this evening would bring. The thrill of meeting new people, sharing with friends, dancing until late, and seeing herself immortalized by Germain's portrait. As she entered the hall, she was immediately swept up to dance by her group of friends.
This was an episode of Beauty Rituals Through the Centuries from Officine Universelle Bully. You will soon find a new story that will take you on a journey through time. Our podcasts are available on all listening platforms.